What is up, and welcome back to 24 Minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I'm Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we're getting even weirder and even more awkward somehow that we are talking about episodes 2 through 5 of The Curse.
A newlywed couple struggle to make their vision for eco-living a reality in a small New Mexico town. Now, we did cover the very first episode of The Curse in episode 116 of our podcast. I think that was just a few episodes ago. So we're planning on covering episodes 6 through 10 in the future as well, after we get done with the 2024 Academy Awards season. New listeners of the pod might not know, but we do a full switchover for the Oscars every year, happening for 1 year. So this will be year number 2, and we're very excited about it, but it does take up like 3 months of the pod where we shift and steer away from A24, and then we'll be back after that. So we'll do half of The Curse now, we'll do half after, and I think that'll be really interesting because we'll have a long time to sit with this show. And at least personally, the more that I sit with it, the more ingenious I believe it to truly be. But we're not at The Curse yet. We have a lot of housekeeping, Ben. So many pieces of news.
It's kind of crazy. It's been a it's been a busy week for A24.
It has. It's been a busy week. So we are going to roll through these really quickly. First piece of news. Audience test screenings for Maxine are happening. People were vaguely tweeting about them. Some people have like described them as uber gory, really off the wall, like really intense. Those tweets are out there if you want to like search for and find them. Basically, the verdict is like thumbs up. People are into Maxine, which is a very good thing to hear.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm happy to hear that people are digging it. I mean, this cast, you know, that we've heard of anyway, sounds awesome.
Yeah,
I think Ty West, I think they're 2 for 2 on these movies with X and Pearl. So I'm very excited for Maxine. And just for the different kind of vibe, because like the first two were different, you know, they're both well done, but they kind of had different, you know, themes and stuff going on. So I'm excited to see what Maxine brings.
Yeah, I'm really interested because this is the first like A24 trilogy, and trilogies, like a lot rides on the final film. Like, do you complete the trilogy kind of a thing, right? Like, can you land the plane? I have faith. I think we're both very high on Pearl and X. I think they're both very good movies. I'm looking forward to Maxine. I think it's going to be very good. Halsey is in it, so I think that's going to be really fun. I believe, is Kevin Bacon in it as well?
This cast is stacked.
Pretty stacked cast, so it's going to be good. We got the first trailer for Alex Garland's Civil War, I kid you not, I just got a notification as I spoke those words that Alex Garland's Civil War is the most expensive A24 movie ever at $75 million.
Whoa.
This was on my notes. This was the next question that I was going to bring up to you. How do we, that's live. We're fuck it. Let's do it live. That's podcasting. How do you feel?
I'm excited about it. You know, he's 2 for 3, I think, with the Ex Machina and Annihilation.
You mean the two movies that they're putting on the post?
I was going to say, even the ones that they'll say, like, from the creator of Ex Machina and Annihilation, please forget about men. It is kind of nuts that, like, they gave him 75 mil after Men. Like, was this agreed on beforehand? Like, it seems kind of crazy that they did this, but I think you can see the budget in the trailer. It looks expansive. It looks big. Again, talk about a great cast. We got a lot of good people in here. But 75 mil, that's nuts.
Yeah. I feel like that is a lot of money. And I was going to like kind of pull that out. It looks like the biggest movie that A24 has ever made. And you can definitely tell in the trailer. And when I first saw the trailer and I tweeted about it, I was like, is this the most like non A24 trailer that we've ever gotten? Because like if you don't know it's Alex Garland, and if you don't put an A24 stamp in that trailer, I don't know if there's necessarily a defining like kind of energy to be like, oh, this is A24. So I think that is a very interesting topic to like quickly branch out to, of like, is A24 feeling the need to widen their net? Are they feeling this, like, Beau is afraid syndrome, right? Of, like, it's like, we got to do crazy shit every single time, or we have to make past lives every single time we make a movie. This movie is definitely neither of those. It looks very closely comped to, like, the new Netflix movie Leave the World Behind, which I assume had a similar budget and has, like, a similar kind of apocalyptic feel to it. We've got Kirsten Dunst. We've got Jesse Plemons. I did want to call it, this is the first movie with both of them since they made The Power of the Dog. So I feel like that's a good sign that they both signed up for this movie.
I'm on board for both of them always. So I think that's great. And the sunglasses that Jesse Plemons is rocking in this trailer.
The red ones, yeah.
Red, they're fantastic. Yeah, I mean, this is, it's interesting because listeners of our Patreon will know that we, in every episode, ask about movies that aren't part of the A24 studio, if they would fit in there. And most times they don't. But now with something like this, like, I don't know, maybe that changes. Maybe Mission Impossible 3 could be an A24 movie. You know, it's like, it's hard to say because now we're seeing stuff like this. It's like, they're branching out into action. Didn't they talk about wanting to do, like, franchise stuff and whatever? So this might be the first we're seeing of that.
Yeah, that's a really, really good call out. And I think, like, it seems, based on what we've seen, not entirely, like, original, I guess, in the fact that it's, like, it is, like, pretty post-apocalyptic, like, America in Civil War derivative, right? I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things. And coming from Alex Garland, the guy who did make Men, like, I truly think that is the most interesting point of this, that they are very purposefully leaving off of the promos and the trailers and the posters. But I think that's a better selling point and a better headspace to go into this movie, because based on what we know about Alex Garland, the final act slash the final 20 minutes, something is going to happen that you are going to fall on either side of the fence on. Like, you are either going to be completely in on it or very, very out, a la like the Men final two scenes, right? So I think there's a lot of potential there, and there's a lot to play with, and, like, this idea and meta commentary and you know, like, social awareness of Civil War and where America's at right now, and, you know, like, the far right and all of these things taking place all at the same time. It looks horrifying and it looks good. I don't know if it looks good. I hesitated. I just don't know.
I think it looks good. I'm excited about it. I mean, Nick Offerman is president of some part of America. It's, like, pretty interesting. The fact that, was it Texas and California secede and become their own, like, nation. That's, like, all, like, talk about things that would never happen, but you're right. I mean, you talk about the final act stuff. Like, I think anyone that's seen these Alex Garland movies, there, you can picture some things in your head right now, no matter how you felt about the movie. Like, he leaves an imprint on you, and I'm excited to see what version of that comes through in Civil War.
Kaylee Spaney is in this movie, who most recently was Priscilla in Priscilla, another A24 production, which is really exciting. And then there's one more actor, and I can't find his name at the moment. He's in the trailer. He's also in Beau's Afraid. And, like, that he, it has been in multiple A24 projects, right? So I just want to know, Stephen McKinley Henderson is his name. This is a very earnest question, and it might come off as totally disrespectful, but
okay.
Do you think Alex Garland will be able to stop himself from introducing some absolutely non-coherent bullshit in the third act, like zombies? Like, are we gonna, like, deteriorate to zombies or like a medical breakout or something that kind of makes the movie lose its punch when it comes to, like, social commentary? You know, do you follow that?
Yeah, like, bring a bigger threat in so the two opposing sides have to join forces or whatever.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. I hope it doesn't, like, just devolve into that at some point, but I don't know. So far, like I said, he's 2 for 3. I feel like the concept of Men was interesting. I think it's fair to say we were both excited going into it. Like, Men looked really good. Like, or looked interesting, at least.
Yeah. So, I think I liked Men a lot more than you did. And I'm in like the slim margins of people who thought Men was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I don't think I hated it. I mean, Rory Kinnear was fantastic. Like it was strong performances all around. It just, yeah, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
It devolved, right? It devolved and lost its punch.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So I think there's a lot of conversation to be had around that. Obviously when Civil War comes out, it'll drop on April 26th, 2024, a little bit of an early birthday present for you.
Indeed.
So we'll have a little birthday pod. I think there'll be a lot of things to talk about in regards to Alex Garland. And I think it's also worth maybe like floating out there for a future conversation of like, does A24 have a fear of breaking up with their boyfriends? Mm. Like, I think like you look at Ari Aster, you look at Robert Eggers, who is moving on to Nosferatu, which is not an A24 production. So
yeah,
I think that, you know, kind of bends into that conversation. You look at Alex Garland, things like this, where like they feel the need to keep auteurs, like really edgy auteurs, on for multiple projects, even if they don't necessarily perform. I think there's a lot of interesting conversation around that.
I can see that. I think a bigger version of that we've seen recently is like WB has to regret not bringing Nolan back, right? You know, like after Oppenheimer, it's just like, obviously the Dark Knight, everything with them. And then he releases this movie that's arguably the biggest movie he's ever done. And there's like, oh shit, maybe we should have like worked with him some more.
Sure.
And I guess you never know when that person's going to do like their biggest movie, you know? So play it safe, keep him around, I guess.
Okay. Very last thing I want to ask you about Civil War. Now that we know that the budget is $75 million, mm-hmm. we can assume that they'll probably see $50 to $75 million in marketing expenses as well. So let's just round up and be really intense and just say 150 mil budget all in.
Yeah.
Is it going to make its money back at the box office in April of 2024, 3 or 4 weeks after Dune 2 comes out?
I don't know. That's a hard call. I mean, the time frame, I think the summer is just getting bigger, because before I say this, understand, I realize this is a weird comparison, but like Infinity War and Endgame came out at the end of April. You know, like people will go to the movies at
this
those
is
times.
The new Endgame, is what you're saying. Alex Garland's
yeah,
Civil
exactly.
War.
This is Endgame. this is we're in the Endgame now. But I'm just saying, like, you know, people are like, well, it's not a summertime release. Like, yeah, but, you know, people will go to a movie if it's good. I think, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home proved that, like all these things, like people will go if they want to see it. I'm curious what the word of mouth is. And like you said, the marketing is going to be huge. Like, you know, we're getting all these stars that are going to be going on these talk shows, which is great. Get the word out. But I don't know. I don't know how many people are dying to go see a movie about like internal conflict within a country when like we're living that on a regular basis.
Yeah. And what might end up panning out to be a less smart Adam McKay take on social commentary. I think that's just something to like be very aware of and like frightful of. Bo is Afraid released on April 14th, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
That movie cost $30 million. That was at the time, and until 5 minutes ago, was the most expensive A24 movie that we knew about. So April, a good release strategy for A24? I don't know. When did Everything Everywhere All at Once come out? I feel like it was a March thing.
Yeah, so it was a February or March kind of release.
I don't know, man. Sure. I just think
I'm still processing the fact that you're calling this a less smart Adam McKay movie. It's like, okay, hold on. Let's pump the brakes here. Like, I love Adam McKay, but like, I know you love your Don't Look Up.
You tell me this doesn't look like a derivative Don't Look Up.
I mean, it's the end of the world movie. I mean, that those, like you said, has been existing forever. This has always been around.
That's fair. So Everything Everywhere All at Once came out March 11th, 2022. So,
okay.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm just very, very intrigued by this. And I think that $75 million budget really made my head spin of what A24 is trying to do. And you're right. It does come after the announcement of like, we want franchise. We want action. We want to do things that we haven't done before. So I think that's worth noting. And like, they're sticking to their word. So I'm really interested to see what the marketing looks like. The second trailer, will it tell us more about the narrative and maybe the Kirsten Dunst, like Jesse Plemons, like kind of opposing sides, it seems. And what, and this is really dumb and nerdy, but like, what are the posters going to look like? Like the Civil War poster we got is very cool.
Yeah.
Are they going to keep doing that? Or are they just going to put out some really lousy Netflix style, like, character posters of like, hey, Jesse Plemons, you know that guy, you should come see this movie. And it's like, I don't know if he's the draw. Anyway, lots of thoughts.
I mean, lots of thoughts. You talk about these weird Netflix type posters after praising Don't Look Up. I'm like, yes, that movie was very guilty of doing it.
I just said it was a good movie, okay?
Okay.
I stand by that. I like my Don't Look Up. Next piece of news, Has-Been Hotel is coming out. We got a trailer for it. This is like the new adult animated musical series from A24. Yeah. This shows up on Prime on January 19th. I don't know if they're dropping all episodes, some episodes. I don't know how many episodes there are. I don't know how long the episodes are. I saw the trailer. I thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah, I think it looks interesting. I feel like it's safe to say you and I didn't know anything about this. Like I had no idea this was coming out at all. So the trailer was a complete surprise, but like, it looks fun. It's another thing where it's just like you talked about earlier, we're entering our time where we cover the Oscars and this is when they're going to start releasing stuff that like, okay, well we'll get to it in March, you know, but I am excited to see it. I think it's going to be fun. I think it looks really interesting. It's cool to have the Broadway voices on this cartoon, and yeah, I think it's gonna be good.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty cool. I think, again, like it's a nice kind of divergence from what we're used to seeing from A24. I know we're talking about a TV show right now on the pod today, but like the last time we talked about a TV show was The Idol, and that was bad. So like I think they're still pretty hit and miss when it comes to TV shows. This show does take place in hell, which I think is pretty fucking cool. So I'm excited for it. Yeah, we'll definitely cover it after the Academy Awards happen. And I think that'll be something really fun to talk about. Two more pieces of news. Dwayne Johnson is going to star in his first A24 film directed by Benny Safdie. That's a sentence. It is going to be a drama that follows MMA fighter Mark Kerr during his peak era in the UFC as he struggles with addiction, winning, and love. I sent this piece of news to you and I was like, I don't know. I just don't know. And you might have turned me around a little bit, but I still don't know.
Yeah, I'm optimistic about it. I think Dwayne that's what we're on a first name basis, but
my boy Dwayne.
I don't know that he's been given the kind of roles where we've been asked a lot, or a lot has been asked of him, you know, and I don't know that he has like the physique to really necessitate that right now. So this is a really interesting role, I think, where we're going to, I think, go into someone's more dark side and their struggles and things like that. We haven't seen a ton of that. You know, his struggles have been in previous movies, like being an amputee with like missing a foot or whatever. And then he has to jump across a building. Like it's all physical based stuff, which, you know, he's going to be an MMA fighter, but I'm curious about it. Obviously the year of Benny Safdie rolls on. So I'm excited to see that as well. But I don't know. I'm optimistic about it. I think he's probably got some chops in him. I think we've seen glimpses of it throughout his career. So it'll be interesting to see him take on like a protagonist role and have to carry something.
Yeah. I'm slightly optimistic. I would say I'm probably less optimistic than you. Of course, like Benny Safdie can do no wrong in my eyes, but, I think this is a fascinating pairing and I like the sound of the movie. And I think of course, Benny Safdie pairing with like addiction, winning, love, like that's Uncut Gems. That's his next untitled project with Josh and Adam Sandler. Like that is what he is good at. And so I think there's a lot of upside there. I, like you, agree that like Dwayne Johnson has not been given the roles that would have maybe allowed him to be this kind of a person on screen. I mean, you look at like the things that he was last in, Jumanji, Jungle Cruise, Red Notice, Black Adam, Fast X. Like, he's just the same person in all of those movies. He also has 18 upcoming projects listed on his IMDb, which is insane. And I only mention this because they are mostly and primarily financed by Netflix for their franchise achievements, mm-hmm. a la Red Notice 2, Red 1. He's also in Fast X Part 2, Jungle Cruise 2, San Andreas 2. It just seems like he got locked into the machine. So I wonder if this will be really helpful for him. And I wonder what this like sounds to me like a 2025 movie or maybe a late 20, probably a spring 2025 in my eyes, based on like what we know about it. One other point to call out on this that I think is interesting is that it is going to be a solo direction from Benny Safdie. It will not be Benny and Josh. Benny has really been kind of spanning like the pantheon of TV and film. Like, he's making The Curse, he's in Oppenheimer, he's now going to direct something like this. They still have their tabled like Adam Sandler follow-up gambling movie. That's still coming down the pipeline, but like Josh Safdie is kind of has kind of went away, and Benny has kind of like been more in the spotlight. So I'm curious what this looks like and what that Benny Safdie solo energy will be.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's, you know, they don't have the same reputation, but we got like Ethan Coen, you know, doing Tragedy Macbeth. Like, we've seen them split up and be able to handle their own projects. So it'll be interesting to see what this is like with him going solo. We're really kind of basing it off two previous movies, though. It's like, so it'll be cool to see what his style is, but this also doesn't seem like it's got the frenetic pace and stuff that Good Time and Uncut Gems did. Like, this is, I don't know if this is right or not, but I'm picturing something like The Wrestler, like a Mickey Rourke kind of thing. I was just going to say. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, so if it's something like this, but for MMA, I'd be curious to see what Benny Safdie's touch is like on a more dramatic movie.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like that's the way we're going to go. And I know I caught some Adam McKay slack in the last thing, but look, Darren Aronofsky, that's the only movie I like from that guy, is The Wrestler. Just going to put that out there.
Oh, we got to move on, man. You're doing my poor heart.
Last piece of news. A24 is partnering with Kojima Productions on the live action feature film adaptation of Hideo Kojima's acclaimed video game Death Stranding. I woke up to this news this morning. I think it dropped at like 7 Eastern or something like that, where I was like fast asleep in Pacific time world. It's fucking sick ass t-shirt dropped with it. It was like a Death Strand, like the A24 plain logo, but it had like a Death Stranding, like strings coming down from it. And as soon as my brain could register, like click to purchase, it was gone. And I assume it had been gone for the several hours that it was already on the shop.
Yeah.
But I'm really bummed out about that. But I think this news is very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I have not played the game. I will say that's one thing I did today, though, is I did purchase it online. It's on sale for $20, PlayStation. So
I was like, maybe we should do a play along sometime. Hey, huh?
I'm not opposed to that. I want to test it out. I want to see, you know, if it's a good enough game to warrant getting a movie made about it. It's like, oh, I want to check it out. And I had heard about it for a while. I just like there's always a queue of movies to watch. There's always a, you know, queue of games to get through. So yeah, I'm excited to check it out and see how it relates to the movie.
Big move for A24 moving into a video game adaptation that's directly in line with the kind of their franchise minded future. So I think this is really good. And from what I've heard, like kind of around the horn, is like, this is a good thing for A24 and this is a good thing for video game adaptations. I've never played the game. I will purchase it and come back at a future date with my opinions. So I'm pretty excited.
I'm excited too. It's going to be good.
Okay, cool. That is all of our housekeeping. I just still can't get over. So I think Civil War is going to be a really interesting topic for us on this podcast. Let's talk about The Curse. This show is so strange. It's so weird.
Yeah. To put it very lightly, yes.
When I watched these episodes, and I think they are equal parts strange, awkward, and weird, as they are like ingenious, poignant, very smart. I think that plays very well with each other. And we'll talk through all of this. We're going to go episode by episode. We'll do 2, 3, 4, and 5. I'm going to give some short descriptions of the episodes, kind of what happens, and then we'll just give our thoughts on that specific episode. But I will say, like, when we got to episode 5, and basically like the last half of episode 5, you can ask my wife, she was on the couch. I was just like rocking back and forth, chanting. I was like, we got to stop. We can't do this. You got to stop making this show. We got to turn this off. We can't make these shows anymore.
Yeah.
I was so affected by what was happening and like Nathan Fielder's total inability to like comprehend what's going on around him, which is the genius of everything. Like, I'm enamored by the curse.
I mean, Nathan Fielder, we've talked about on this, like, I love his stuff. I love Nathan For You. I think he's hilarious, and he's just proven that point, I think, on this show as well. Like, mm-hmm. he's holding his own against Emma Stone, award-winning actress, Oscar-winning actress, right? And
yeah.
I think he's doing a good job. Benny Safdie is playing a weird character intentionally, and he's playing him very well because he is very weird for sure. But I can't take my eyes off Nathan Fielder, like, no matter what's going on.
So quickly about the Benny Safdie thing. So there's a few moments that we get in these episodes that are very deep, disturbing looks at his psyche.
Yeah.
One in particular, I can't remember what episode it falls into. So I wanted to quickly like bring it up. He steals Asher's phone, who is Nathan Fielder's character. Mm-hmm. He steals Asher's phone, and Asher comes like looking for it, and he's like, hey, why did you have my phone? And he's like, why are there dating apps on my phone?
Yeah.
And Benny Safdie as Dougie is just like laughs and just like, oh, I thought it was funny. I was gonna download some dating apps and then give it to Whitney, your wife, and yeah. say you were trying to date people. And Asher is just like, What are you doing? Whatever. And then he's like, why is my phone wet? And all Dougie does is like hold up an ice cube and then pop it in his mouth. And you're just like, what a fucking weirdo. Weird person.
He's pretty unhinged. And it's hilarious. We see it quite a bit throughout these episodes. I think that was the last episode. I think that was episode 5, but it's one of the more recent ones. But it's so funny. He's like, why did you download J-Date and Tinder on my phone? Like, oh, I thought it'd be funny to show Whitney. It's like, all right, I don't know why it's funny, but you know, he talks earlier where he's just like, oh, I'm sorry we always picked on you. It's like, oh, what are you talking about? So it felt like he kind of like went back into that for a little while. So it was interesting to see.
It feels like the more that the show goes on and the deeper that we get into it, the smarter it becomes and the more kind of like nuanced commentary we get, obviously, on like modern day gentrification and kind of like these moral gray lines when it comes to like creating content or what might be going on behind a camera or in front of a camera, and like this content obsessed culture that we have. So I think that is worth noting, that this show like has a lot to say about very particular things.
Yeah.
And I know I brought up Leave the World Behind earlier, and I think that's a great juxtaposition to this. I think like that's a movie that has a lot to say about a lot of different things, and it does not pan out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think The Curse is very focused in what it wants to talk about. So I think that works very well. Do you have any other general thoughts to share before we talk about episode 2?
No, just that I couldn't take my eyes off Nathan Fielder. I think he's a great addition to this. And I'm very curious to see where the last 5 episodes go.
I'm so curious, like, what does the writer's room look like? Like, what does directing an episode look like with Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie both in those headspaces where they're like, we have to create something that's never been done before? Like that, I mean, that is the entire thing of Nathan Fielder's like persona. I really wonder what that's like being around that. We've kind of seen like tinges of that when they've accepted some awards. There was like an award speech going around a couple of weeks ago. I think Nathan Fielder won some kind of innovation award or something like that. And Benny Safdie was up there, and Nathan Fielder was like, I told Benny Safdie not to do the bit, and he did it anyway. And like, he just doesn't snap out of being Nathan Fielder ever.
Yeah.
And it's disconcerting.
I think it's like part of the genius of him. I mean, on the flip side of that was his appearance on Kimmel with Emma Stone.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
You know, that
I saw it.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't know. You like, Jimmy, maybe you just call them and tell them that I am like super funny and super cool. And like, I'm not stiff or anything like that. Like, and that was hilarious seeing him play that bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good. Okay, episode two. Let's kind of dive into this here. So this is called Pressure's Looking Good So Far. Shout out A24 for the silent auction paddle scenes. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's a Benny Safdie signature. Because we got it in Uncut Gems as well. So I love that.
Yeah.
This is where Asher and Whitney meet for dinner with an art friend. Her name is Kara. They're planning to use her art in their homes and really trying to get her to like sign off. Very, very awkward dinner. Basically doesn't amount to anything, and Kara like could give two shits about what they want and just ends up leaving and being called away. And this is also at this moment where Whitney reveals that she is pregnant to Asher. Mm-hmm. In probably the most pathetic way possible. Like at this restaurant, after they're feeling so defeated.
Yeah.
Definitely as like a comeback tool of like, okay, well that didn't work, but at least we're pregnant. Like that's okay. And this is like part of the Nathan Fielder genius in this scene where he's like, when did you find out? She said yesterday. And he goes, oh, you didn't tell me yesterday. Okay, yeah, it's okay. You're probably really busy. You told me today. That's okay. And it's like, oh my God, guy. Like, this yeah. is, makes my blood boil. Dougie reveals that he was involved in a drunk driving incident and then proceeds to drive drunk. Can I ask you quickly, because I can't remember this drunk driving incident. Was this the incident that killed his wife? Like, is he responsible for that?
Yes, even though he's like the way he's telling the story is that it would have happened right. even if he was sober because they got right. like T-boned or whatever. I thought you were about to ask me if I've ever driven drunk before. That's like that brings up a question I gotta ask you. But yeah, he keeps like passing off responsibility and stuff while telling the story.
Yeah, and he's on a date with someone like for the first time and they're awkward enough, but yeah. like she ends up going home with him and basically on the drive home, he asks her to like go in the glove box and get the breathalyzer mm-hmm. and he blows into it and she's like, oh, it says like 0.13. Like, what does that mean? And he's like, huh, interesting. We should try that one more time and see what happens. And he does it again and he blows over the limit, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think it's hilarious that he was like, I'm going to pull over. I'm going to be responsible. This is dangerous and I don't want to do that. And it's like, my guy, you fucking, like, you have done this before. Anyway,
yeah.
Really crazy stuff. A couple more points to this episode. Asher spilling Gatorade on himself, trying to steal the casino information. This clip, A24 posted this clip to TikTok, and I think I've probably seen this like 13 or 14 times by now. I know I've said it, but like, I just don't understand how Nathan Fielder operates on yeah. this level. How does he do a scene like this where he covers himself in Gatorade and has to like make a mockery of his, of how he's a complete dunce and he just rolls with it. He just does it.
And he plays it straight. He doesn't break. He doesn't do anything like that. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. And I think that just kind of speaks to how hilarious and funny he is because it does take a certain type of comedian to be able to pull that off. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I think it's great. That whole scene was super awkward. He's like, I got to show you this viral video. Let's just go to your computer. He's like, just send it to me. He's like, no, you got to see it now, man. You got to see like just all the ways he's like trying to get into the back of this casino to download that information. I thought that worked out really well.
And then the art show with the screaming, this is Kara's art show that they go to. Whitney and Asher kind of go into this hut. It's like this interactive kind of art piece, art installation. And Kara screams and both of them react in different ways. And I think it's really telling of like their inner kind of convictions to themselves and to one another. Because Kara asks the people in the tent, like, please don't share this experience with anybody else. That's part yeah. of the art. Like that's part of the individuality. And as soon as Whitney is done, she asks Nathan, like, or sorry, she asks Asher. See, that's my point. She asks Asher, like, what was it like? What did you eat the ham? Like, what did you do? And he's like, I can't tell you. She told me not to tell anybody. Yeah. And so like Asher has these really weird moments of very strong conviction about right from wrong that continue, like that gray zone just keeps getting bigger every single episode. And by the time we get to the end of five, it's it's very, very large of like what is acceptable in his eyes. And then at the very end of the episode, we find out that Whitney does have a miscarriage, and the baby did not survive. And so this really kind of, again, a huge downbeat to end the episode.
Yeah.
That has been a very emotional roller coaster. I thought episode two was very good.
Yeah, it was a great follow up. I mean, they set the tone with one, and that was a fantastic episode. I was somewhat relieved that we didn't have any more micro penises showing up. so that was good. But I thought this was, it was really funny, really well done. Like you mentioned, the first dinner with the artist, and the artist is like, well, you guys aren't putting it like in your models, right? They're like, oh, no, just like in our home, you know, because they just don't have the contract signed or anything yet. So, interesting to see all kind of the behind the scenes stuff. I loved the art show. It's probably my favorite part. Even where, I think Whitney invites one of the local tribesmen, but from a different tribe that just sounds similar, you know, and they're just like, oh no, that's a completely different thing. She's like, oh, okay, great. My bad. You know, like it's just the amount of awkward in these episodes, is there's just so much going on.
Yeah, I think for me, the dinner scene really took the cake to like lead off the episode. It is up there for me with like Breaking Bad awkward dinner like levels, where it's just like, oh, this is an all time great awkward dinner scene. And I think there's a lot of good stuff in episode two. Okay, episode three is called Quest Elaine. Now, this is kind of where it feels like we evolve from really like this first act, this first setting up of like here we are and here's what we're doing, to like really getting more involved and deeper into the production of their show and everything that is taking place. It starts with a really long sequence of them watching feedback video of like a test audience for their TV show, for like the pilot of their show.
Yeah.
And pretty much the consensus is like Asher is a loser. He sucks. Like he's not funny. He doesn't have a personality. Like someone either says like, either make him hot or funny. I need one of those two things. And he is neither. And I think it's really hilarious that Dougie, there's like 2 or 3 minutes left on the video and Dougie is trying to order Domino's. And Whitney's like, it's going to be over in like a couple of minutes. And he's like, no, it's cool. We'll order. And she's like, no, just wait. And he's like, all right, yeah, no, it's cool. Well, I'll just like order it afterwards and we'll just eat it after, right? And it's like, even this guy who is making the show is weirded out by the show. So like, it's this really interesting insight into like human capability of producing one thing and like aligning your allegiances with the opposite of that thing. Mm-hmm. I like this opening scene. What did you think of this before I list everything else?
I mean, it was great to watch, you know, kind of the control room, like get the feedback from all these people that have watched the show and just the roller coaster they go through of the feelings. Cause there is a moment it's like, yeah, that's great. You know, and they're both, oh good. Okay. Everyone likes it. It's like, well, you know, except for the husband, he kind of sucks, you know, and just Asher's being like, well, what, I don't get what they're talking about. Like I'm super funny. And she's like, yep, super funny. You know, it's like, you just kind of got to go along with it. It was a great way to kick off this episode.
Definitely. Okay. So, and this is where Asher buys the house with Nala's family. Nala is a girl who cursed him in the very first episode. Mm-hmm. So he buys this house from an auction and he goes to go kind of take it over. And it turns out that they're in this house. They basically live in this home and they're squatting. So I think this episode in particular really tackles this like modern day gentrification and like this like pretty much like white savior mentality of like what is taking place around them and how they have to be involved. They have to be the ones to save them. Like they are always constantly involved. We get a doctor's appointment taking care of the miscarriage. This is where Whitney has to get a shot to kind of kill the fetus and move on. Just worth calling out that this is the first of many, many incredibly awkward sexual remarks that Nathan Fielder tosses into this show. Because the doctor tells them obviously to like refrain from intercourse, and he then proceeds to tell the doctor that he's been tracking Whitney's period like to the day and he wants to know like what her next period is going to be, and then asks like about finger penetration and other things, and Whitney is noticeably uncomfortable. And based on what we saw in the first episode, like it's just weird. And it's just like only he would think about this in this situation.
Yeah, it's like his brain is so focused on, you know, I don't know, getting her pregnant again. I think the doctor says something like, you know, you want to wait 6 weeks. And it's like he pulls up the calendar and does like exactly 6 weeks later. He's like, so this day we can do it. He's like, well, you know, give or take some time. Like, yeah, that's fine. So, you definitely see where his attention is.
Definitely. And like I said, first of many weird sexual remarks. I believe in another episode coming up, he mentions to Whitney how he'd like to film her. And then she's like, what does that mean? And he's like, film you come. And then it was just like, I think she walks away. And I wanted to walk away. I wanted to stop watching that episode. Dougie crying in bed, another really good insight into him and basically waiting to figure out if their show has been picked up. Abshir is Nala's dad. Whitney and Asher go over to Abshir's house for dinner. This line that I wrote down from Whitney is so perfect for exactly what this show stands for. Abshir and his girls are essentially squatting in this home. They're living here, like non-legally, I guess, or like however you want to call it. And
they're squatting.
Yeah, they're squatting. And Whitney comes in and is like, ooh, what are you making for dinner? It smells delicious. And he looks around and he's just like, hot dogs? And she's like, oh, do you eat that with rice? Or like, what do you eat that? And he goes, with buns and ketchup? And it is just a complete analyzing of like the huge amount of remove that Whitney and Asher feel that they have earned from this place that Abshir and his family are in. And 1,000,000% like judging a book by its cover. We later find out that Abshir is from Minnesota. And that's why he doesn't like curses, which has nothing to do with one or the other. Then we get the video at the end of the episode, the sweater zipper Instagram video. They're actually kind of like have a sexual tension chemistry when this is happening.
Yeah, they have a real moment.
Right. When this is happening authentically, and then they try to recreate it for Instagram, and it is just truly among one of the most cringy scenes I've ever seen in my life. Mad respect to Emma Stone for like carrying this and really making that happen. Then this devolves into a huge argument that they have that they realize is caught on tape. Really not forceful, but just enough of like a nudge to be like, hey, we're talking about like how contentization of things changes people. And this was really indicative of that. Last one of the episode is that Fernando starts in as a security guard because Whitney feels bad that he got laid off from the coffee shop because their contracts are pretty much bullshit and nothing is going the way they planned.
Yep. Everything's like falling apart. This for me, episode 3, not to show my hand too much, but it does have my True Cinema moment.
Oh, okay.
And it is just, we talked about it, but it's that hot dog scene is just so funny. You know, it's hilarious. So it's like, what do you make it? Do you make it with rice? Water. She's like, oh, yep. I love boiled hot dogs as well. And then you serve it with like veggies. What do you serve with? It's like a bun.
But like, know, Emma Stone's so personality is so perfect for that because she is like oblivious. She plays that so well.
Yeah, she's trying to like, you know, like you said, as they walk in, she's like, oh, it smells delicious. What is it? Thinking it's some like cultural, like she wants to be open-minded and whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe Barkhad Abdi, who plays Abshir, he was in Captain Phillips. People may recognize him.
Yes.
If nothing else, from the meme of I'm the captain now. Like, that's who the guy is. And I believe he is Somali. So I'm sure she's walking and thinking they're going to get some, you know, wonderful dish or something from his culture. It's like, no, it's just hot dogs. Like, you got to just lower your expectations and like, oh, where are you from? I was from Minnesota. But it was a cool episode too, to learn about the tiny curse and what that all came from, that it was all just like a TikTok trend. And, but then watching Asher kind of lose his mind about like, wait, well, we didn't have the chicken. That's what they wished for. And so like, he kind of loses it. Like, it reinforces. For a second, I think he's able to blow it off, like, okay, it was a dumb TikTok trend. And then he realizes, like, it worked. It's like, oh, shit, okay, hold on. So, that was a great episode.
And it's like that grasp of social media power, of that grasp of, like, kind of living in perpetuity, these things, that they continue to have power, whatever they might be. Episode 4, Under the Big Tree, I just want to like take a second to break down this opening because like I had so many questions when I was opening. Yeah. I think it's like such a weird, interesting, total pivot from what we get in 1, 2, and 3 to open the episodes. This is where we see Dougie sleeping in his car. He gets a call that the show is picked up and it's really exciting, but then his phone dies. Then he is pretty much like parked by the river. There's other cars around. Nobody's in the cars. He starts like walking around, wandering. He has a note of some sort that says like under the big tree. And so he starts digging for things under big trees. And then he ends up going to the smallest tree and finding car keys for these other cars. Are we going to learn more about that later? Like, or like, do you know how he got there? Like, what is that all about?
I don't know exactly, but I feel like it's tied to him showing up at that kid's house because he had the Mercedes keys for that G-Wagon or whatever it was with the address tied to it. So I feel like in a drunken stupor, he wrote down the addresses of these kids of just like, all right, this is where the cars need to go back to while we're all like out here partying. And he buried the keys so the kids couldn't find it. That's why they were like in the ground. And so I feel like these were all notes that he wrote to himself about like where to take the cars back to. And that's how he's able to like turn it on the kid later on. It's like, no, like and his mom would be like, you should be thanking me that I bought them alcohol, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. So it just confirms that he is a super weirdo partying with high schoolers.
Yep. Yeah. For
awesome.
Sure.
Awesome. Okay, great. That's really checks out. That's really fun. The show's picked up. We get a call with Whitney and Asher. This is where Asher dons a cowboy hat and does some really fucking weird stuff, dude.
He is the Jim Carrey spanky very much. Like, it was insane.
He's like muting her phone, trying to inject his quips and one-liners, and then like not, it's just way too much is happening.
The secondhand embarrassment this show brings is absurd. I hate it.
I hate it. It's so bad. Whitney monitoring at the actions of her neighbors. This is when basically someone puts out a letter of like these packages and things like this. This is where that kind of storyline of like Whitney being this protector, this overlord, the savior of like the neighborhood she's created and the community she is trying to create. And she is trying to manipulate these to be exactly how she wants is really awkward and weird and insightful into her. Conversation that Abshir has with Asher about no more curse talk. This is where we learn that he's from Minnesota. And because Asher, you know, is like, oh, wow. Like, why do you not like curses? Like, where are you from? And he's like, I'm from Minnesota. He's like, I just don't like curses. So I think there's a lot more there to be explored in the back five about like Abshir and Nala and like this social media addiction of like, he mentions it took him a long time to get Nala to stop talking about the tiny curse.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. Two more things to this episode. Asher and Dougie have a conversation. You kind of brought this up earlier where Dougie is like, sorry, we bullied you so much, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, wow. Like maybe the tables aren't level like we initially thought that they were. And then we get the improv class at the very end. And I don't know if you watched all the way through the credits, but the audio of this improv class continues, which I thought was a good touch. But basically the improv class teacher is like, we're going to go around the class. We're going to be funny, but we're not going to say anything. No sounds, just be funny with what you have. And secondhand embarrassment, like for real in this episode, because I'm just like, we got to like, this is where I'm talking about. Like, we got to stop. Like, why are we making this so ingenious, but so awkward? And then it gets to Asher and he just lets out an animal sound. Like,
I thought it was like a baby whale, but yeah, it was something. It reminded me of, you know, for any fans of The Office, when Michael goes to his improv classes and he whispers in someone's ear that he has a gun, you know, he's like, well, you can never outdo a gun, you know, it's just like, that's kind of what he's doing here. He's like, well, I'll just do like the biggest thing. I'll break the rule. But yeah, I thought it was such a good, awkward scene. I did love the conversation with Dougie because Asher remembered it differently. He remembered it as like, he was in on the joke. You're like, oh no, we were like joking around together. And Dougie's like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. You know, like we were just picking on you, but if that's how you want to remember it, then that's great.
Yeah, definitely. I think the improv class as well is a really good insight into Asher and like his inability to maybe just be himself. And yeah. And he always feels like he's striving to be, especially what Whitney wants him to be. Whitney suggests this improv class, but like be something else. And I think that is like a total side effect of like this TV world that he is now in. Okay, so episode 4, I think probably the weirdest that Dougie's been to date, I would say. Episode 5, this is where we're at so far. This episode is called It's a Good Day. This is really where the show and the production starts to take off, and we see a lot of the behind the scenes of how they make the show and the misalignment of reality, what we see on our televisions. Maybe the people that are touring the home don't actually care. They don't actually buy the house. Like nothing yeah. actually happens. All of these really meaningful intricacies. And the episode kind of starts with this couple, and this goes on for a good chunk of the episode, touring the home and all of these things. And it's really awkward. And then the guy asks about like AC units and how basically every time you open a door to the home, like it takes 8 hours for the house to readjust the temperature. And we get these insights into like, maybe these homes are kind of pieces of shit.
Yeah. Maybe the sustainable home is a bummer. Like no one wants it.
Absolutely. So I think there's a lot there. They try to force them to sign some papers. That doesn't end up happening. They call on Kara, who is their art friend, to come and like tour the home and give them good content. She basically openly mocks them while doing this tour. And it is really, really tough to watch because it's so slicing, like at Whitney in particular. We find out there's some thefts going on at the jean store and the now closed coffee shop and things like that. Whitney gets her credit card number and is just like, this is how, if you see anybody stealing anything, like don't say anything, just charge it to my credit card. Another really insightful narrative for her character of like, I can fix everything and it doesn't need to, you know, quote unquote, like harm the community or like put more like multicultural people behind bars and like things like this of like these very presupposed ideas of the community that probably aren't real to some extent. Whitney has a conversation in the car with her parents wanting to be involved in the properties. I'm really hoping we get more insight into this storyline in the back 5 episodes. I think there's a lot to unpack here because like her parents are basically like landlords, like slumlords is what we know about them. I thought this was a good scene.
And we haven't seen them since episode 1, right? This is their first time that we've seen them again. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting, a lot of insight in this the scene as she, you know, yells at her parents and stuff like that. So yeah, really well done.
And then is this the most awkward scene in the show yet? When the guy is touring the house after basically like being plucked from the streets and tried to be paired with another person, another baby and like make all of these TV things that Winnie wants. They get to the end of this tour and of the show and filming. And they're like, yeah, we really like this house. And then him and his partner look at each other and he just starts belting music.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to die. I just wanted to run away from this happening.
It was so awkward. And like, there's just so many long kind of like pregnant pauses and stuff. And we then realized, so we cut outside, that Dougie's just talking to Kara. He doesn't have the headphones on, so he's not paying attention. So he's not calling cut. He's not doing anything like that. So they're just like coming up with stuff to do in the house. You know, it's like, okay, let's do that take one more time. So yeah, it just shows Dougie's lack of attention to detail. But yeah, such an awkward, I mean, I think about that whenever we watch any of these like bachelor type shows and someone's like, I wrote you a song. I was like, oh my God, like I just want to crawl inside and die. Like, please don't sing right now.
Please stop. Last thing of episode 5, Asher basically like puts up a very good argument to show their house to this guy named Mark Rose, who is pretty much like a right leaning participant of society. He's got like a kind of a Blue Lives Matter situation going on. He's got a lot of stickers on his truck. He brings that energy into this house tour. And this is what I think is most insightful and impactful to like Asher's continually emerging gray area of morals of like, who is it okay to sell to? And like these types of things that are eroding. And this ends with Whitney basically telling him like, if I was mad at you, you would know. And we very clearly understand she is fucking livid.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. So I think there's a lot to unpack. And it is the worst because like we're watching the real life decaying of Asher and him striving for what he thinks is good actually being the worst thing that could happen.
Yes. And then all like again, like with his focus of just like you're at peak fertility. So now's the time where it's like,
ugh,
read the room, dude. Like this is so rough to watch. And just him even coming over and like care to share and just like grabbing the lotion. I was like, oh, this is just so weird.
You got it.
So
like awkward. Even you saying that just triggers me where I'm just like, oh my God, too much.
I can't do it.
Out of all of these episodes, do you have a favorite episode? And do you have a true cinema moment?
It's probably three. The hot dog scene to me is just like the funniest thing that happens so far. But a lot of great stuff. Seeing the behind the scenes in episode five of them like trying to get all these clients and things like that is really interesting. But three, Quest Elaine for me is the best one so far.
Yeah. I like that. I think episode three tackles the most of what this show is trying to like narratively wrap its arms around.
Yeah.
But I think like episode five is fun. I think they all kind of bring like their different flavor to making the entire picture. But yeah, much like you, I think episode three is probably the best of this bunch. Episode five would be next for me. I think episode four might be the weakest. And that's just because it feels like it is a setup moving into five. Of like, cool, the show has picked up, how are we all reacting to that? And then we're in five. I think there's a lot of good things. Truthfully, like, and if you follow me on Twitter, you know, like every time I watch an episode, I tweet about how masterful this show is.
Yeah.
I know we're not saying like a lot of bad things. I don't really think there's a lot of negative things to say about this show, if any. I think we're still five episodes from the completion, and we'll have a much better look at it in a few months when we talk about it again. But like, I think it is easily one of the best shows of the year.
Interesting. I don't think I'm on the same page as you. It's definitely better than The Idol, which for me isn't saying a ton. But I mean, we'll get into our rankings and stuff, but okay. This is, I'm curious if I would finish this if we weren't going to talk about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That is interesting. Okay, cool. Well, let's put a pin in that until we get to the ranking.
For sure.
Curious. A1 Axe, we did Nathan Fielder. We did Emma Stone last week, or last time we talked about this show. So we're just going to do Benny Safdie for this one. I feel like it's pretty fitting for what we've talked about. So, of course, actor and director. So for actor, I say we pick one of each, actor and director.
Let's do it.
Okay, so for actor, we're going to go with, we've got Good Time, Licorice Pizza, Stars at Noon, another A24.
I forgot he was kind of
slept on. He really pops off in that movie. Obi-Wan Kenobi for like a half of a second. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Oppenheimer, and then we have The Curse. What are you going to pick for acting?
The surprise for me this year so far, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. He's just he's just like the dad you want, you know?
Yep.
Like he's a real supportive dad and looks like he's in a happy marriage and stuff like that. So it's so different than everything else that we've seen him do this year. So yeah, that's what I'm gonna go with.
That is also what I'm gonna go with, which is pretty crazy considering like Oppie is on this list. Licorice Pizza, like one of my favorite PTA movies on this list. I think he's really good in that. Like Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret is one of my favorite movies of the year. And I think I don't think it only works because of Benny Safdie, but I think it is as good as it is because of what he brings to his role.
Yeah.
And he's the perfect, like, kind of totally average dad in the 80s, which I just respect a lot. Okay, for director, we've got Daddy Long Legs, Lenny Cook, Good Time, the Jay-Z Marcy Me music video. I didn't know he directed that. Very interesting. Yeah. Uncut Gems with his brother. Untitled, Safdie Bros and Adam Sandler film, which we have kind of touched on. And then we have the MMA Dwayne Johnson A24 project. I'm going to let you pick stuff in the future if you're willing to bet your horse on it.
I think I'm going to. I'm going to go with The Rock. I'm really curious to see what they do together. I think The Rock knows that he's going to have to step up his game. He's not going to be able to fall back on what he has and all of his action roles. And yeah, I'm really curious to see.
Wow. That's cool. I love that for you. I am just not there.
I feel
not,
like they'll both like be close. Bringing the heat, you know, this is like one of his first solo directing projects. So they're both trying to like prove themselves.
That's true. That's true. I'm going to go with Uncut Gems. Of course, that does not really come as a surprise, but the asterisk on this is the untitled Safdie Bros and Adam Sandler film that will be set in the world of basketball card trading,
yeah.
I believe is what we know about it. Can it be better than Uncut Gems? I think it can. And I think that trifecta, the holy trinity of people, have the magic sauce to like to make an Uncut Gems. And I think with the time that they've had and the past things they've done together, I think it's got the makings to be like a very defining film in all of their careers, especially for A24. So I would say like that would be my next one if I'm going to go like with a future pick.
I'm hoping it bumps up the value of my basketball cards, you know?
Yeah, for real. For real. What's in it for me? okay, A24 ranking, A through F, and as a pluses, minuses. I really am curious to your, I want to know the inner workings of the Ben brain here.
I haven't like disliked anything. I just maybe haven't been as captivated as I thought I might be.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with a C+, 24.
Whoa. Yeah. I feel like that's a personal attack.
I mean, maybe it is.
I feel like this, I
for
feel
all
like
that
you
don't look up talk. This you is
might
payback.
Just, you might just have it out for Benny Safdie because you're not an Oppie guy. And
there
now
can
you're
only
not,
be
on,
one Benny.
Not in on the curse.
Can only be one Benny. it's burrito.
What's
it's
in it for me? That's what I'm saying. Okay, then what did you want a solid
C+.
C+. Okay, just because maybe it didn't live up to your expectations.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that there's room for it to like get better. You know what I mean? For me, anyway. So yeah, C+.
We got 5 episodes to go. I have no idea how the show is going to shake. I believe episodes 7 and 8, or 8 and 9, some kind of combination like that, are playing it at the Lincoln Center in New York next week or this week, or like it's pretty soon.
Nice.
And so those pre-screenings are happening. So I'm really curious where this show is going to go. But for me, I think it's like A24 material.
Okay.
I think it is them doing different things, being weird, but also being completely sold on exactly what they're trying to put on screen and wrapping their arms around really interesting, important social contexts that continue to devolve and get more uncomfortable and more unwielding and just like more Nathan Fielder special, to be honest. Like I think that is working very well for this show. I like the mix up of cameras that we get sometime. Like sometimes we move to like a handheld and it kind of breaks this wall. So with that in mind, again, like I'm curious where we're going to go forward on this. And like, I think nothing is off the table when it comes to Nathan Fielder based on the last projects that we've seen out of him.
Yeah.
This could take a turn like at any moment and become super meta or become super self-aware or like whatever have you. So I'm really interested in that, but I do think it is one of the best TV shows of the year. I think in terms of A24, it is definitely the top of the pile for certain with their TV show selection.
And you're a proud Cherry Tomato boy. So, I mean,
always have
like
been,
playing,
always will be.
Yeah,
yeah.
Playing right to you.
I
like
knew
that.
From the first episode, I was like, Cherry Tomato boys, we rise.
Here we are.
We stay together. All right, man. Any closing thoughts on The Curse? Because we're not going to talk about it for like 4 more months.
I know it's going to be a while. I am genuinely curious to see how my thoughts on it evolve over time. So it'll be fun to cover those last 5 in, whenever that is, March. Who knows when?
Yeah, late March, early April, probably sometime around then. Next week on the pod, we are talking about The Iron Claw. What I think is one of the best movies of the year. I don't know about you, but I was deeply, deeply impacted and affected by this movie, and I think it is lovely.
Okay.
You going to say anything? You going to follow that up? I'm just trying to draw you out.
I know. Well, I'm just going to leave it at that. Like, I think this is like part of why I'm so bad at my Letterboxd reviews, because I don't want to put anything up there until we've talked about it.
No, that's
at
fair.
At least that's the excuse I give myself for not putting them all up there.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, whatever you got to tell yourself to make yourself,
that's
you know,
what, that's feel, what it is. That's
feel
like
okay.
I tell myself.
We are going to have a really special guest on, Liam Crowley of comicbook.com. is going to come on. He's a huge wrestling guy. I believe this is one of his, if not his single favorite movie of the year. So it'll be really fun to talk to him about this movie.
Nice. I'm excited. We'll see if I play heel or not. Let us know what your guys' thoughts are on The Curse. We are on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. And please don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can watch us talk about these movies, ring the bell, all that stuff, you know, whatever.
Smash just that like button.
Smash it. Thanks everyone for your support. Really appreciate it. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simmy. Spring break forever, bitches. Oh wait, Cherry Tomato Boys forever, bitches.
Bitches. There it is. Oh, man.